Hey, yo, what is a cipher?
1, 2, 3, 4, bam, bam, bam. Get up. I'm like, I want to do something like that where I just bring the energy before the beat even drop.
The knowledge of the cipher is to enlighten you.
Where you think the cipher come from?
The gods.
Because you tried to jump the cipher and it goes this way.
Welcome to The Cipher, a podcast bringing you talks with the most interesting figures in hip-hop and culture. I'm your host, Sean Sotaro. This is episode 239. Because it's a holiday weekend, and because we took a big trip to the Soundset Festival, which you'll hear about very soon, this time around, we're giving you something a little different. A revisiting and revamp of our 2013 conversation with Big Daddy Kane. This talk with Kane, originally released as episode 32, was one of our first really popular interviews. It garnered a fair amount of attention for some revelations about rap beefs, and especially for who produced his early songs. So we've decided to go back into the archives and make it better. Even if you've heard the interview before, this version adds necessary song clips and context to make it a real episode of The Cipher. If you like The Cipher, please check out our Patreon at patreon.com/thecipher show. Each new patron gets Josh a little closer to buying a brand new set of Ginsu knives. Also, we know some of you want shirts and other stuff, so please go to merch.thecyphershow.com and get yourself a t-shirt. If you want to know any of the songs we're playing during this episode, visit thecyphershow.com to find a complete list and the show notes. While you're there, sign up for our monthly newsletter to stay on top of what's going on with The Cipher. And now, here's King Asiatic Nobody's Equal, Big Daddy Kane.
Here with the word legend doesn't even really do it justice. Here with Big Daddy Kane. Thanks for coming by,
man. No, glad to be here, man. Yeah. Glad to be here.
So I wanted to start at the very beginning. Some demos and radio promo stuff I heard of yours that I think even predates the first album, that thing you did for BLS, the Raw Attitude or whatever it was.
Oh, me and Antoinette.
Yeah, yeah.
I can tell you an interesting story about that.
Yeah, please.
Because of Raw Attitude, that's how I ended up getting the music for Young, Gifted, and Black. Huh. Yeah, because me and Antoinette was cool, and, you know, Marley asked about doing a promo, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to have Antoinette do it with me. And I made a track over at Marley House, and me and Antoinette, you know, we did like that Raw Attitude promo, just talking, because I had Raw and she had I Got an Attitude.
Here I am, R-A-W, a terrorist, here to bring trouble to phony MCs. I move on and seize, I just conquer and solve another rapper with ease.
Style, I know the routine, all punk, pop, and dumb, can't join my team, I got an attitude.
So we called the promo Raw Attitude. And, we did it just for Marley, for the BLS show. Yeah. But Marley took the beat and gave it to MC Shan for his album. So afterwards, I'm like, yo, that's my beat. How you just going to give Shan my beat? I'm like, well, yo, you owe me a beat, homie. And he like, all right, well, we working. I'm like, no. I already know what I want. Because I had already heard that track, and that was a track that he originally had for Shan. So I was like, I already know what I want. That one with the dun, dun. I'm like, yeah, I need that. And that's how I ended up getting Young, Gifted, and Black.
Rough, rugged, and real, you're gonna stand still. To obey your case, so let the man build.
Nice. Even on that song, which that predated your first album, right? That no?
I don't know. I don't know. It could have. Honestly, I don't even remember. It could have.
Yeah. But even around that time, like 88, 89 and before, you were doing like the multi-syllable rhyming thing. And that really wasn't super common back then. I was just curious, like what inspired you to use that technique?
You talk about like putting a bunch of words that all like all rhymed and
yeah.
You see the B I G the D A D D Y B I the K A N E. Excited the lighter, invite a fighter, do fool, so I can school and rule at igniter. Party to the climb.
I learned that from Grandmaster Caz, from the Cold Crush brothers. You know, that's that brother, he was doing that back in 1981. You know, he had some little rhyme he did, like, I just steal the feel, make sure it's real. And if you go and get your brother, I won't kneel. Just thrash and bash and get cold cash, smoke hash in a flash, but I don't dash. You know, like, so that's where I really, you know, learned that from Grandmaster Caz and the Cold Crush brothers.
Wow. Yeah, because Ultramagnetic was doing that same kind of style at around the same time as well.
Yeah. I'm ready,
and now it's my turn to build, uplift, get swift, then drift off and do my own thing. Switch up, change my pitch up, smack my bitch up like a pimp for any rapper.
Well, they probably learned it from Caz, too. You know, I mean, Caz, you know, it's like, you know, lots of times I always say, you know, that hip-hop tree. I say, like, you know, Melly Mel birthed KRS-One, and he birthed Tupac. You know, Kumo D birthed Rakim. Rakim birthed Nas. Grandmaster Caz birthed me. I birthed Biggie and Jay, you know.
Definitely. So speaking of the family tree of hip-hop, on your Twitter account, I noticed a while ago, you made a list of your five top MCs and then your five top hip-hop artists.
Yeah.
And there was no overlap there, and that really surprised me.
I don't know what y'all gonna do with this, but it got to be funky. It got to be funky.
Kane's top five MCs were himself, KRS-One, Rakim, Kool G Rap, and Nas. His top five hip-hop artists were LL Cool J, Tupac, Jay-Z, Eminem, and Run DMC.
What's the difference to you between an MC and a hip-hop artist?
Well, when I say the MC, I'm talking about, you know, the person that just has those lyrical skills. You know, I mean, that don't, you know, MC can also be a party rocker, but because I'm a lyricist, I was really just taking into consideration those with lyrical skills. So that's what I base my top five on. And, you know, a lot of tweets that I got, you know, was like, yo, well, how you didn't put Biggie in there? And I mean, you know, I really think that Biggie was a great MC, you know? And I think that those two albums that he left us with are better than a lot of other rappers' whole catalogs that have made 10, 12 albums. However, you know, due to the fact that he had only done two albums, it was hard to really base, you know, like, I mean, put that against artists who've had a long career of great lyrics, you know, like 10, 15 years of just great lyrics, such as Nas, Kool G Rap, you know, myself, Rakim, KRS, you know. So that's what I was basing on, like, who's been, like, ill lyricists for a long period of time. Because there were artists that came before us who, like, were super lyrical in their time, but then their skills diminish. You know, so I was just basing, like, who could still really hold fort and put it down.
Definitely. A few minutes
ago. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sure, of course.
Also, now with the artists, that was totally based on, you know, like, success and, you know, contributions that you've made thanks to your fame in hip-hop. Mm-hmm. That's how I came up with those five, you know, because, I mean, like, you take, like, someone like Run DMC, who basically created artists getting endorsement deals. LL, you know, going from clothing line to starring on NCIS. I mean, like, in Jay, I mean, you know, dude part on a NBA team. You know what I'm saying? And Tupac, I mean, you know, I don't think there's another male rapper alive that can say that he got thugged out men walking the street with tattoos of him on them.
There was something that I wondered about on your early records. It was a little unusual to me. You talked a lot about, you know, 5% Gods and Earth doctrine and a lot of their concepts on those records.
Dramatic, Asiatic, not like many. I'm different, so don't compare me to another. The king of my kingdom, completing a cipher. The lyrics I bring them keep the crowd hyper. As I release the masterpiece, the groove will never cease until Kane says peace.
But you also gave a ton of shout-outs to the Nation of Islam and to Farrakhan.
Slaves for mental death and power. That's
That's the reason before I drop this bomb, I say peace to the nation of Islam. You're too small, kid, don't get involved with the verbal bomb for the nation of Islam. Wisdom I speak makes your head.
And a lot of artists didn't really, kind of chose one or the other in a way. And I was just curious about kind of your relationship.
I mean, it's all Islam. It's all Islam. You know, I mean, any way you look at it, it's all Islam. I mean, I don't believe in, you know, separation. I believe in, you know, knowledge of self. You know what I mean? As long as you're doing the knowledge, what you know and your views, that's how you live your life. You live your life that way, as righteous as you possibly can. And it's not about trying to discredit this division or, you know, what, you know, this division over here feel. I don't operate like that. I have nothing but the utmost respect for Minister Farrakhan and any other form of Islam that anyone practices. You know, I don't condone any of the violence that you have seen by, you know, some, you know, Islamic extremists around the world. But, I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm Islamic, I'm proud of it, and I always will be. And I embrace any Islamic brother from anywhere.
Okay. Would you have considered yourself at any point a member of either of those two groups, or?
Oh, yeah, 5%. That's why, yeah, when I was young, yeah, that was, you know, my thing. Like, that started, like, around, like, I want to say, like, 81, you know, when I started dealing with all the gods on earth back then. Yeah, that's what I was dealing with. You know, now I just say Islam.
So I was curious about The Day You're Mine, about that tune, because I was reading something where you said that Shan's tune, Left Me Lonely, was like a model for that song, right? And you had, I think, even the same producer or whatever, something like that.
Yeah.
Be the mother of your children as well as your wife. She used to tell me all the time I'm her one and only, but she ran with another man and left me lonely.
Both songs, unsurprisingly, were produced by Marley Marl.
Exotic beauty, and to captivate her love is my only duty. There's not a single feature that this girl lacks. Sweetheart, you're my aphrodisiac.
Are there any other songs that you worked on where you came in with, like, a model in mind? Oh, I kind of want to do my spin on this particular song or that particular song.
Yeah. Set It Off. Like, I think about James Brown's Sex Machine. How, like, you amp before it starts. How he just, I'm ready to get into my thing. Moving, grooving, you know, can we count it off?
I want to get into it, man, you know. Like a sex machine, man. Moving, doing it, you know. Can I count it off? One, two, three, four. Get up.
It's like the energy James is bringing. As it's like you ain't heard the beat drop yet, but you sitting like moving, like you sitting there feeling like Bobby Bird. Yeah. Yeah, you know what I'm saying? It's like, and then they, one, two, three, four, bam, bam, bam. Get up. I'm like, I want to do something like that where I just bring the energy before the beat even drop. So that's why I would Set It Off. You see, just start off just with the rhymes and let it roll, get bold. I just can't. And then the beat, dun, 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 you know, it come in later.
Let it roll, get bold. I just can't hold back a fold because I'm a man with soul and control and effects. So what the heck? Rock the discotheques and this groove is what's next. Attack, react, exact, the Mac, I'll move you in.
Like my dad, I tried to model behind James Brown's Sex Machine. Yeah.
And early in your career, you used the word peace a lot. You know, ending songs with it, or sometimes rhyming explicitly about it.
That's positive, and the message I got to give is a benefit for you and me. I'm talking about P-E-A-C-E, the chosen one that has turned the new leaf. I got knowledge of self is being taught here on after peace in the name of myself, Lord and Master. I come to teach and preach.
What did peace mean to you back then?
Obviously, not the same thing it means to a lot of people today, man. I mean, you know, peace is, you know, for one, it's a universal greeting, you know. It can mean, you know, hello. It could mean goodbye. But more importantly, you know, it's a way of life, you know. It's you know, basically living a peaceful life, a righteous life, you know, with love for your, you know, your fellow man, you know. Love for your sister, love for your brother, that type of thing.
Excellent. And on your each of your first three records, it seems like, you know, I hate this term, but it seems like, for lack of a better term, there are more, an increasing amount of, like, message records or conscious records or something on each of those albums. And why, what changed that allowed you to kind of talk more as your career went on about, like, social issues and you know, messages and even, you know, gods and earths, beliefs and things like that?
Well, I mean, I'm a lyricist, but at the same time, I've always tried to approach my career as an artist. And as an artist, I believe that there's a lot of things that people want to hear. If you're a heavy hip-hop fan, you want to hear lyrics. So I'm going to try to give you that. If you want to, if you're a woman, you know, you may want to hear about love. So I try to give them that.
It looks like my feelings been ignited for you, baby. Maybe just a little bit too soon. I realize that hearts get broken, sweetheart. I couldn't stand the wound. So I'm putting mine in your hands, girl.
But as, you know, a young generation trying to survive in this world, you need someone that can, A, feel your pain, and B, make you feel like there is something better. There's a way for you to survive, things that you can achieve, you know? So therefore, I try to, you know, deliver some sort of message that, you know, my fan base, I mean, that will touch my fan base, and they feel like, you know, like, yo, he understand what I'm going through, or, yeah, I can dig where he coming from. Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Faith, belief, and peace upon each other with my sisters and brothers.
Yo, word to the mother.
I say the mother as in the motherland, but on the other hand, another man tackled and shackled our ancestors, but we beat them with freedom. So let's bless the country.
Okay, and did you feel as the records went on that maybe you had a little more pull, a little more weight to kind of talk about this stuff more frequently?
I mean, nah, it was just what I wanted to do.
You
know, I mean, it was, you know, it's it, you know, at that point in time, it wasn't like, you know, the industry now where, you know, you have labels telling you what to talk about, otherwise they're not putting the project out. I mean, you know, Warner Brothers was fair. Coachella was fair. They let us talk about whatever the hell we wanted to talk about, you know.
And one of my favorite message songs of yours is I'll Take You There. And mm-hmm. I kind of wanted to get behind that a little bit and see what you're thinking about, why you decided to, like, talk about problems by not talking about them, by talking about their absence.
Off to a place you thought was unreal, where people of the world do know how to chill. Everything remains cool and calm where you are. And if you ask about crime, they all say, huh? They wouldn't even know what you mean, because it's a different program. Y'all know the routine where people work.
Okay, well, yeah, basically, I'll Take You There. That was really like a fantasy record. Like, you know, close your eyes and imagine this place. You know, that's the way, you know, I try to do it, you know, where I could cover so many different things that was affecting people. And, like, just close your eyes and just try to imagine, like, you know, the world being like this. You know, I guess it's more, well, yeah, I mean, it has to be an inspirational song, because the original I'll Take You There, if you look under genre, you know, it don't say gospel, it says inspirational when you look at stage singers.
Somebody.
So yeah, that's basically, it was just an inspirational song. And it also was the first song I did with Marley Marl too.
Oh.
We did that the day that Biz was supposed to record Nobody Beats the Biz. Like, I came there with the lyrics, knocked on the door. Marley was talking to me with the chain on the door. He was like, nah, Biz ain't here. I'm like, well, you remember me? I was here with him the other day. He was like, well, he ain't here. So, you know, I took the train from Brooklyn. Okay, he ain't here. You know, money, I don't know what to tell you. And I was like, all right, man. Well, here's the lyrics he's supposed to do today. Just give them to him. And then that's what he was like, yo, you writing Biz stuff? I'm like, well, I mean, I wrote that. So then he took the chain off, and he's like, you know, yo, how does it go? Can you say it for me? And I said the rhyme.
Yes, darling, to the light beating. You could either dance or just have a seat and listen to the way in what I am displaying. A different kind of rapper language that I am saying.
He's like, yeah, yo, yeah, come on in, you know. And then we got to talk, and he asked me to rhyme. I spit another rhyme for him, and then we worked on a song. It ended up being I'll Take You There.
Wow. Yeah. That's an amazing story. So you've done so much rapping-wise in terms of styles and tricks and things like that that have, you know, people picked up on over the years. And I wanted specifically to talk about one. On Warm It Up, Kane, you have that whole line, I meant to say whack.
And this is one thing to us, we ain't noodle. The cruel cast fell in the crowd just like poodle. I'm the man you can't hold back. And all competition appeared to be weak. I meant to say whack. A vision of blur. Just a thinking I'm competing, I say, ha, warm it up, Kane.
And that kind of whole fake mess up thing is now basically like an entire style. You know, people use it all the time.
I'm all about the Franklins, Lincolns, and Reagans. Whenever they make them, I shall hate them. Oops, I meant have them. I'm so crazy.
Ooh, I hit your ching and my name bells ring. Oops, I mean my name ring bells ding ding.
A lot of people spoke foul words, they had to eat that. Oops, I mean eat those. Yeah. It's the life that we chose. Sure. Make the same.
So I was just curious about how you feel when you see stuff like that, things that you did and maybe didn't even think that much of at the time, sort of becoming this sort of entire, almost very established thing.
I mean, I think that's beautiful. I mean, because, you know, I don't mind being a blueprint. You know, I'm a fan of lyrics and I try to give good music. And if someone wants to model their career off of something I've done, I think that's beautiful. And I'm also honored at the same time, you know, that you would, you know, choose me as that person, you know. So, I mean, I think that's beautiful. But, I mean, yeah, I don't mind being a blueprint because I want to see you do it right, you know.
Definitely. So there's something I always wondered. Back on the Show and Prove song, there are a couple lines that kind of sound maybe like they're aimed at Eric Sermon.
I see the way you're trying to get to me, but with that speech impediment of me, man, you gotta come better, G. You're hitting all the wrong switches to begin to get. Mumble mouth rappers couldn't last a minute with the non.
Did you guys have any kind of little disagreement or back and forth during that era?
Honestly, yeah. But, we talked afterwards, but by the time we talked, it was too late. The song was already like pressed, and you know. But yeah.
What was behind that? Do you want to?
It was something that he said on a song.
You're gonna be large.
Yeah, right. That's what the company kicks. Forget the black crowd. You're whack now in a suit, front and black, looking mad flat.
You ain't down with the format. When you should be wearing khakis and not dress slacks, that's whack. You're tripping. You better wake.
And, you know, someone else came back to me and was like, yo, I asked him, and he said, yeah, he was talking about you. And I was like, well, let's get the party started then.
Nice.
You know, so I just, you know, I took a cheap shot. And but when I went to go approach him about it, you know, he told me, nah, that's not, you know, what he meant.
Eric Sermon actually gave us his version of the story behind the beef on episode 233.
It was Stay Real. But Kane just took it out of proportion. I would never disrespect Kane.
Do you remember what the line was?
And even in Crossover, it was just, we didn't mention Kane and Crossover, and we didn't mention Kane and Stay Real.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, when you talk about somebody wearing suits, they take it the wrong, like it's them. He's the only one that's wearing suits. You know, I think that it was people saying it, and then he took it, but we would never diss him.
You know, you're probably the first person that ever asked me that too.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
About the
I don't think no one has ever asked me that. Wow. Not even him.
Wow. Hmm. So you did a song with Rudy Ray Moore, and obviously he was sort of performing that as Dolemite.
Allow me to introduce myself as the Big Daddy Kane. A smooth lover from around the way that's bound to drive any bitch insane.
Well, Dolemite is my name, and rapping and tapping is my game.
What kind of influence did Dolemite have on you when you were growing up? I feel like I've heard a lot of. I mean, you certainly did do a good impression of him on that song.
I walked barefoot from New York to Dallas, won for Pimp of the Year at the Caesar's Palace. Made a big snowstorm on the 4th of July and drunk the waters in the Atlantic Ocean till that shit was dry. I was making money before Washington was put on a bill. And I kicked Jack's ass and took his whole jail.
So I feel like probably not the first time you've imitated him.
Oh, nah. Well, you know, we all love the movies. Dolomite, Human Tornado, Petey Wheatstraw, The Devil's Son-in-Law. You know, we all love the movies. I mean, we used to watch them back-to-back on the tour bus, you know, to like a VHS with pop, literally, you know. And when Eric B. called me and he was like, yo, guess who I got for my video? He's like, I got Dolomite. I'm like, man, you will. Oh, can I?
What?
Can I curse?
Yes, of course.
I'm like, man, you bullshitting. And he's like, no, I got Dolomite. And I'm like, yo, I got to do a song with him. So we worked it out. And Eric flew him in. I paid for his hotel. That morning, he went and did the ghetto video with Eric B. and Rakim.
Why you jive turkeys? I'll knock you through Sunday and be waiting for you on Monday. You're too young to have seen the sights of Esther, Mammy, and Pappy about Dolomite.
Planet Earth.
And then came to the studio that afternoon, and we cut the song. And it was the funniest thing in the world because he was still in character. Like, he still had the Afro wig on and the loud 70s pimp suit.
From the video shoot.
Yeah. And my dancer, Scoob and Scrap, Scoob knew who it was, but Scrap didn't know. So Scrap's sitting there next to me like, yo, you got your grandfather up in here to do a song or something? So I didn't say nothing. I was just like, you see. And then, you know, when I let him up in here, and he just started, you know, you such and such, you know. And Scrap is like, yo, that's the Dolomite dude? Scrap just like, yo, you got him in the... Like, yeah, he was just losing it. And I mean, it's the type of thing where, like, I don't know how many times the engineer forgot to, like, stop the tape because he was so busy laughing at the stuff he was saying, man. And then, like, you know, just to look, because, like I said, he's still in character from the Eric B. video. He still had the wig and the loud clothing on, so it was just magic for me. Yeah,
that's amazing. I wanted to ask you, one of my favorite metaphor simile type things you do is, you know, on Mortal Kombat, you know, where you talk about, you know, word will be like surgery cutting you open.
Every word will be just like surgery cutting you open, so rush to emergency or either bow to your knees and bend low or get played like a game of Nintendo.
And you also have that famous line about Ginzu knives.
You're just a butter knife, I'm a machete. This made by Ginzu, wait until when you tried the front so I can chop into your body. Just because you try to be basin, Friday the 13th, I'ma play Jason.
And so I was just curious if you talk about your idea of your rapping as like a knife, as a blade, something like that, if that's kind of something that was running around in your head at all.
Oh, you mean, did I feel like that's how I was rapping?
Yeah, do you feel that's how you were rapping? Like, how'd you come up with that image? You know what I mean?
I mean, yeah, I mean, that's the way I meant it at that time. I mean, like, you know, with that particular rhyme, yeah. You know, yeah. But, yeah, you know, just... I don't know, you'd be up late up in one night and see a Ginzu knife commercial.
This is Ginzu 2, a complete set of knives like this Ginzu chef's knife. It'll cut through a branch and still remain razor sharp. And look, the dual edge is like two knives in one. But wait.
Oh, that's hot. Put that in, so, you know.
Nice.
That type of thing.
Excellent. You obviously have, you know, lines about martial arts as well.
I was trying to hang and just swear that they can party, but the style that I'm using is just like karate. So if we ever battle, you're bound to be through because I got a black belt and rap can do.
No, and obviously you know, took your name from the Kane character.
Kane took his rap name from David Carradine's character Kwai Chang Kane in the 1970s TV series Kung Fu.
Yeah, I mean, like, as a kid, man, you know, like, you know, like, 3 o'clock Saturday, yeah, in the house, Channel 5, watch Kung Fu Theater.
The Five Deadly Venoms, next, here on Channel 5.
Sunday, 1 o'clock, in the house, watch Kung Fu Theater, you know, Thursday, 9 o'clock, I think David Carradine Kung Fu used to come on. Oh, yeah, go to the boys' club, you know, to watch Kung Fu movies whenever they had it over, you know, by the Navy Yard. You know, I mean, that was, like, my thing as a kid. Like, just mad fascinated. So, you know, it's like, you know, if I out playing with the rest of the kids and jump out of a Coco Livio game or a stickball game because it's about that time for Kung Fu Theater. You know, they had a joke calling me Bruce Lee or Kane or Young Grasshopper, you know, but I the Kane thing kind of stuck. I just ran with that one.
Yeah. Can you talk, speaking of Kane, can you talk a little bit about creating Warm It Up Kane? Because you produced and rhymed on that one. Of all your songs, I feel like that's the one with the most, like, pop culture references.
But this time I'm not assisted on the microphone, nor like Patti LaBelle on my own. Yes, single-handed, the mic I commanded. Phony MCs don't understand it, damn it. That's the real thing, like a taste of coke. So never sleep on me, you better stay awoke. Like a gambler in
really? Yeah, I thought so. I mean, just, you know, giving, re-listening to stuff in anticipation for this. So that wasn't conscious. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to put in a bunch of, like, kind of pop culture stuff in that tune. It's just how it came out.
What pop? Oh, you're talking about like what other samples you mean?
No, in the lyrics, I think, as well. Oh. A bunch of different references.
I don't know. What did I say?
I'm trying to remember. It's been a while, yeah. But you produced that as well, right? Can you talk a little about the producing that tune?
Oh, well, I mean, I produced a whole bunch of stuff
this
other
is
than
actually,
that.
Yeah, this is one thing I wanted to ask
get
you.
No credit that, for it.
Yeah,
know?
that's one of the things that I wanted to ask you is, like, you've kind of hinted at that before, that maybe you did a little more production work on your early stuff than is commonly thought.
Yeah. Well, the type of thing where, you know, at that time, you know, I was young, so I didn't know. I just was going by what I was told. And, you know, basically, like, you know, Raw, Ain't No Half-Stepping, pretty much everything off the first album except for Set It Off. Set It Off was actually done by Mark 45. Then.
The 45 King has worked with everybody from Queen Latifah to Jay-Z and Eminem. Whether or not you know him, you should check out episode 115 for more on him.
And Molly did I'll Take You There. But I mean, other than that, pretty much all that stuff is me.
Really?
Know? Yeah. Half Step and Long Live the Kane, Raw. All that stuff is me, you know. I mean, it just rhymed with Biz.
My man, my mellow, get on the mic, because you know you eat Jell-O.
Check it out, y'all. You don't stop. Keep on. Well, it's the Kane in the flesh. Of course I'm fresh. Oh, you thought that I was rotten? I beg your pardon. To me, getting paid.
We didn't even really do that in Marley House. I did that in my man Shemshon house in LG, Lafayette Gardens, you know, and just brought it to Marley House. But,
And somehow the credits ended up saying something a little different.
Yeah, see, what I was told was, yo, you know, we got to deal with Warner Brothers because they look at Mr. Magic as the air personality that's going to play any of our songs because he's on the radio, and they look at Marley as the super producer. If they thought that Marley wasn't the super producer, we all lose the deal, and none of us would have no label. So, I mean, you know, it need to say produced by Marley Marl. I mean, don't worry, you're going to get your money. And my dumb ass, you know, like 18, 19 years old, I believe that. Okay. Yeah.
Wow.
So that's why, you know, we became a little legal thing. And then once we worked it out, I was able to put my name on there. And I became, you know, got my producer credit. Like, even on that song, I took some shots at him. I said something, like took some cheap shots at the label and at Mr. Magic. What the hell did I say? Something about, someone slowed the juice, so I had to start rushing.
Start hallucinating like magic. The rap gets tragic and Kane won't have it. Cause you tried to juice me when you're bluffing. Slowed the pace, so I had to start rushing. So pick a BC date, cause you're history. Here comes Kane, Scoop, Scrap, J, and Mr. C. And this is one thing.
I left them to sign with Rush Management. And, you know, Leo used to call all his artists Russians, cause it was Rush Management.
Yeah.
You know, so I said, slow the juice, so I had to start rushing. And I said something about magic, the raft get tragic. I can't remember, but I, you know, was taking cheap shots at them then, you know, on that song.
Wow, already. That's incredible. Moving forward a little bit on another victory you know, there was a tune that came out so strongly against drug dealing and that kind of stuff.
Damn, pocket this lifestyle be fun to man to see a brother get paid undercover, selling drugs to one another. Cause all the glamour you get is miscellaneous, and all the product you sell is real dangerous. Like
what was it like for you to see the whole drug kingpin persona start to take over rap, even sort of as early as the mid-90s?
It had its positive and its negative side, you know. The positive side was those were a lot of the tour promoters. You know, those were a lot of the tour promoters. And now I'm not even going to say that because I might mess a whole lot of people's future up. But those were a lot of the tour promoters. So, we was making a lot of money, because a lot of those cats were booking shows. And also, coming to the concerts, because cats that was hustling, they go buy like 30 tickets for their whole crew. So all their whole crew could come, dressed all and everybody got their Dapper Dan outfit on and falling up in it. Like, that was the thing. So, we made a lot of money because of that. But then, of course, the negative side, what it was doing, to people, man, you're seeing so many crackheads out late at night walking the streets and all that this stuff. And, just crazy. It was just real crazy. It wasn't like, alcoholics or heroin addicts, you see three or four on a block. I'm talking about, you might see about 30 people outside fiending, just walking on one block, that type of thing. That was a real crazy time.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember who I was talking to, but someone who remembered that era who said that they, literally couldn't even go to the corner store without people hitting them up for.
Yeah. It wasn't like, like the heroin era where, you might see two or three, junkies just sitting there leaning, the alcoholics, you see a bum on the corner, Nah, this was like, you see about, they'd be out there like 30 deep.
Yeah. So one of the things that I've really admired about your style and your songs is like you put, for lack of a better word, positive messages even into bragging songs, into party songs, rather than just having them being like standalone. This is my serious song where I talk about serious stuff, right? Kind of sneak little gems into, like I said, party songs or bragging songs or whatever. Why was that so important to do? Why do that as opposed to just having like two or three songs where you can talk about, serious stuff?
I think one thing I always had a habit of doing is like when I get in my zone when I'm writing and I done said some crazy negative stuff, I try to smooth it out. I don't want it to be perceived wrong, so let me bring it back over here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. That's great. And in your debut especially, you have this real lighthearted, fun sense on a bunch of stuff. There's the jokes about peanut butter. Stuff that kind of keeps things light. And I was just wondering if you could, I feel like I hear that in a lot of stuff from that era. And then sometime, somewhere around the mid-90s, I feel like that kind of sense of fun and playfulness sort of disappeared.
Oh, yeah. Well, by the time in mid-90s, it was gangster rap, It became where it's like, you as an artist, you standing on stage performing to people that's just sitting there doing this. That was your audience.
Yeah.
Like, you look like a clown if you had dancers on stage. Mm-hmm. You have fine, drop-dead gorgeous chicks coming up to you talking about, yo, keep it real, son. It was just everybody was just caught up in this whole gangster thing. And, it was really, it pretty much killed the whole party feel. Like, it killed that whole have a good time, have fun. It made it where everybody was just on this here thugged out, grimy, smoke weed, you know, type of thing. You know, and it was dead for a minute. I think Puff was the one who revived it. You know, Puff brought it back because he figured out a way to incorporate the gangster stuff into, but like he had cats spitting gangster lyrics over party disco beats. So he brought the fun and the party back. You know, when you can hear all the thugged out gangster stuff, but it's over the disco beat that you remember from back in the days. Oh, that was my shit.
And a lot of the sort of fun disco stuff happened at clubs in New York, right at the LQ and in various places like that when you were starting out.
Well, I mean, no, it goes deeper than the LQ. Yeah. I mean, we talking about Roxy, Danceteria, Roseland, Harlem World, you know, because because it's like, you know, when hip hop began, that's what it basically emerged from, you know, the people that was going to disco converted to hip hop. The younger generation, I mean, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like if you was in between, you know, 18 and 25 and you was going to the clubs to hear disco, you started going to like Harlem World, Stardust Ballroom and them type of places to hear hip hop instead, you know. And when you go, it's like you still listen to disco, it's just that there's MCs now.
Wow. So what would a typical night be like back then at Harlem World or even later when you started performing at Latin Quarter or something like that?
Oh, Latin Quarters, a typical night, going there, have a few Heinekens and bag a chick. Then when they throw on Ghost Stetzer, you tuck your chain in and stand back in the corner so them Brooklyn niggas can tear the spot up.
To the DJs nonstop, to the sound of the Brooklyn hip hop. And if you've ever seen Brooklyn rock, rock the nonstop break.
And go downstairs, get you a gyro, and take the train home.
Nice. So jumping to the present day, you were telling me off camera that you just finished a new record. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah. I united with a soul band here in New York called The Lifted Crew. And my man Showtime that sings with Pharoah March. Mm-hmm. And we got together to do this thing called The Last Supper. And basically what we did was we combined vintage soul, 60s and 70s soul, with vintage 80s hip-hop, you know, over live music. I mean, live drums, live guitar, live everything. I mean, on down to, like, the glockenspiel, you know. It's all live. And, you know, we have, like a real nice, you know, soulful project.
Love won't ride on me. Oh, yes, indeed. Ever since until present tense, I see your mommy and bag it like evidence. The game's most play I designed like Coach K to make clothes laid and vanish like so say. But that's my own way, no more.
Excellent. I can't wait to hear it. Anything else on the horizon you're working on?
Me and Premier, we just cut a me and Premier just did a Michael Jordan commercial for the Jordan 3s.
On the streets of Brooklyn, you see this kid looking tight in his MJs, white and cement gray. You're sure to see a pair of Jordan 3s. Now you wanna talk legendary, talk to me. Some break
young, cause he has like a big February promotion going on, and me and Premier did one of the commercials.
Excellent. That's incredible. Which one of the last things, you know, winding down, I wanted to ask you is you made your list of producers on your Twitter account that are your favorite ones. And you said Easy Mo B was your favorite.
Oh, yeah.
Which really.
I saw Easy Mo B do something that just blew my mind. Like I still think about that sometimes. Like when I'm by a drum machine, I still think about that. It's like, I be feeling like if certain producers was here to see what he just did, they would probably just put their stuff away, man. Just, I don't want to do this no more.
What's a memory you have of working with him that blew you away?
It was like I brought a record to him that had like this like ill Fender Rhodes roll in it. Like it sounded real eerie, like one of them sounds you hear in Scooby-Doo. You know, it was like real eerie sounding Fender Rhodes sound. And these piano chops, doom, 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 doom. And like, that's what I heard. And it was hot. And I'm like, yeah, I want you to flip that. And, you know, he sat there, we chopping it up. He just playing the record. He must have played the record back to back for about 20 minutes, like from beginning to end. And we talking now, you know, we just conversating, but the record's playing. Then he went to work on it. And I don't know how the hell he heard all these parts, but I mean, I watched him chop one bass note, like a bass note, boom, and catch a doom, doom over here, and this guitar, bam. And like, he was just catching all these here parts. And then when he put this beat together and then was making, I was just sitting there like, yeah, I've never seen nothing like that. And I mean, I've seen producers chop samples, but what he did, like, I'm like, yo, you are a freak of nature. Like, I don't know how the hell you did that, but thank you. You know, for real.
Awesome. Well, I am honored that you came by. Thank you so much for...
Oh, no, man. My pleasure, man.
Coming to hang out.
Even though this interview took place over 5 years ago, I still remember it so well. Talking to Kane was an absolute thrill. And listening back, I was amazed at how open and honest and how thoughtful he was about his music and his place in rap's canon. It was one of the first interviews I'd conducted to that point with someone that important in rap's history, and it's still one of my favorites. Join us in 2 weeks when we're back to brand new episodes. We'll have Kaylin Heffernan of Wheelchair Sports Camp. She's a formidable MC, but she's equally notable as an activist. She's played a huge role in the recent debate over the Affordable Care Act, and even your mom has seen her on TV for it. And now she's taking things one step further and running for mayor of Denver. Tune in to find out all about it. To make sure you hear each episode of The Cipher as soon as it comes out, subscribe on Apple Podcasts or whatever podcast app you use. Make sure you check out our archives when you're there. If you like this episode, listen to our talk with Kane's fellow Juice Crew member, Masta Ace, on episode 120. By the way, if you use Apple's podcast to listen, go now and give us a rating and a review. It's by far the easiest way to help us out, which is why every podcast you listen to wants you to do it. Seriously, go now and do it. And you can really help us by becoming a patron. Visit us at patreon.com/thecyphershow and sign up. Bringing you each episode takes at least 20 hours of work, and we could really use the support. If even 20% of you gave us a buck a month, maybe I could finally afford a pair of vegan Jordan 3s. And again, go buy a shirt, a mug, or whatever you want at merch.thecyphershow.com. You can find us at The Cipher Show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Follow us and let us know what you thought of this episode and who you'd like to see on the show in the future. More information about anything related to the podcast, playlists, our complete archives, and more can be found for free at thecyphershow.com. The Cipher is created and written by Sean Sotaro.
All that stuff is me, you know.
The show is produced and engineered by Josh Cross at Crosstown Studios.
You know, like, yo, he understand what I'm going through.
Our music is by 42 Ghosts.
Yeah!
Our web guru is Aaron Young.
I've always tried to approach my career as an artist.
Audio editing by Rob Van Vranken.
Sunday, 1 o'clock, in the house.
Special thanks to Patreon supporter, Saias.
Go buy, like, 30 tickets for the whole crew.
We'll see you next time around on The Cipher.
My man.